Well, it was almost completely dark in the room when all of a sudden I felt the crackle of slimy flesh and bone under my feet. Nasty. Denise later told me that in the dim light, it looked as if my body went 3 feet up and 3 feet backward at the same time. All I knew was that I was back on my bed, clawing at the bottom of my foot, trying to remove the slimy substance that was now adhering to it. When Denise had finally calmed down from laughing, that's her natural reaction. If I hit my head, she laughs. If I stub my toe, she laughs. We finally switched on the light. We discovered that I had stepped on and crushed a little newt, or a salamander, or something like that. Not something one expects to experience on one's bedroom floor. Now, we may chuckle about incidents like that. Maybe you have some of your own you can recall. But things are often a little bit more serious, aren't they? Unexpected events befall us that leave us groping in the emotional or in emotional and spiritual dark, desperately trying to find some sort of light switch, hoping for answers. Maybe that describes where you're at this morning. I wonder what Jesus felt like when he heard that his cousin John had been arrested. What kind of darkness enveloped him as he glimpsed his own future in that arrest? And what kind of darkness must David have been in at different times, as we read in today's psalm? Now, we didn't read the whole psalm, and I'll fill in some of the details as we go, but hitmen are out to get him, to kill him. And enemies often seem to be on his every side, about to knock down his front door. Psalm 27 is actually a model prayer for us when times are difficult, in dark times. It is, like so many of the psalms, deeply connected with the ups and especially the downs of life. It begins in robust trust. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? And indeed, the first 6 verses of the psalm are a remarkable profession of faith in God. David asserts that God is his light in dark places. And David's trust, as I've already mentioned, is not theoretical, but something that is working in the midst of really difficult circumstances. Notice that in each profession of God that David makes, he personalizes it. My light, my salvation. David is convinced that God is the source and sustainer of his life. And it is this kind of trust, this faith, that casts out fear. Fear, not doubt, is the great enemy of faith, the great robber of opportunities. And so what has come to matter to me is a faith, a trust that enables opportunity, that is able to confront my fears. When it comes to why we are here this morning instead of sipping a latte somewhere else, it's a spirituality that connects to our actual lives, that confronts our fears and helps us live well, that helps me, that helps us live out our spiritual potential and live freer from shame and guilt. Not maybe totally free, but freer, getting there kind of faith. I think that's why we're here this morning. We want to know in our own soul, my light, my salvation. I think most of us would say, yeah, I want to experience that. I want to know God in that way. But we have some follow-up questions. First of all, is it possible? What would we need to do or not do in order for that experience to be ours? This psalm, I find, is particularly helpful in orienting us in its psychological realism, its exploratory spirituality, if you will, and allows for development in our lives, as well as genuine help when the chips are down. It is a spirituality oriented around one thing thinking. I don't know how this got left out of our psalm in the bulletin, because this was the one verse I hoped would make it in, but this is what it says. One thing I have asked of the Lord, one thing I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the fair beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. One thing thinking, one thing living, is not just doing one thing. Couldn't be. For example, just going to the temple, just going to church, just praying, etc. Obviously not. I mean, just to look at the author of the psalm, if we were to take the ascription on top of it seriously, David was a king. He's a politician. He's a warrior. He's a husband, a father, a hunter, a poet, a musician, just to name a few things. He did a lot. He did many things. Hell, maybe he kept bees in the backyard. I don't know. Maybe he had a hobby. One thing thinking, one thing living, is not just about doing one thing, but it's being about one thing. Being about one thing. Concerned for one thing above all other things. It's your life vision. It's what motivates you in all your doing, in all your working, your playing, your relating. And so David is saying, this is what it is for me. I'm desiring and seeking God's presence, God's holy, life-giving, guiding presence in all he does. And because he's about this vision, this one thing, he can do many things freer from fear. David had fears, and he expresses those in the Psalms, but he is also seeking to be freer from fear. And I think that's the realistic spirituality that the Psalms point to. If something fearful says to him, you should be about something else, just abdicate your kingship and run away. And there was opportunities when that was the voice that was really strong in David's head. Hide from your responsibilities. You might get hurt. Or something else. David would say to those other voices, but this thing, this calling I have to seek God, this is what makes life true and beautiful and good. And if I can't live for and with God, all of these other things aren't worth protecting. So bring it on. The power of this way of thinking and living is demonstrated in Jesus' reaction to John's arrest. Initially, it looks like the opposite of that, doesn't it? It looks like he's caving in to fear by withdrawing into Galilee. The first verse says. But as the text from Isaiah makes clear, wake up, Galilee of the Gentiles, a great light is shining on you. This isn't so much a withdrawing, but a recoiling, a pulling back on the bowstring, if you will, in order that now Jesus can begin the proclamation of the kingdom. In the face of terror, Jesus steps in. His focus on the one thing that matters, God's mission of loving justice for all the world, overcomes his fear. And so now he begins to call followers, disciples. Now he calls us to similar one thing living. I'm interested in how to do this. I've been thinking about it for many years, mostly failing in my attempts. But I keep trying. And I think that's the essence of it. keep trying. How do we develop a vision for life, for God, that can shape our present and our future? The biblical prescription is always the same. It begins with prayer. And our psalm is marvelous for helping us to understand authentic, realistic prayer. Prayer that can change us and shape us. You see, David is a man of means. He's a man of power, of wealth, great wealth. He's a man of fame. But he realizes that a place of inner stability and perspective will not come from fame, from power, or from wealth, all of which are fleeting, but through an active trust in God, a God who has proven faithful even in the most harrowing of circumstances. And so David practices this trust in a faithful God by essentially talking to himself in the shower. What do I mean by that? Well, he's reminding himself of God's character. He speaks to himself. Prayer is certainly talking to God and listening to God, but it often begins by talking to ourselves. If you read the Psalms, you'll realize how much of that is going on. One of the disadvantages of using an inclusive Psalter, which we use in our bulletin, is that it obscures this reality. Let me explain that. Our bulletin says, for instance, in verse 6, now I don't know if this made it into our bulletin or not, it should have, "Even now you lift up my head above my enemies round about me. Therefore I will offer in your dwelling an oblation with sounds of great gladness." That's the language of direct address, speaking to God. But in the NRSV version, the one we read from our lectern, and that reflects more closely the Hebrew, it says this: "Now my head is lifted up above my enemies all around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy." See, he's talking to himself. God is in the third person. In an effort to hide the male pronoun, "I will offer in his tent," we've changed the entire feel of the psalm, making it seem as if David is directly addressing God when he's actually reminding himself, ruminating to himself about God's character. Now, I'm generally very much in favor of genderless language when it comes to God. I don't think God is a he or a she or an it. God is God. I get it, and I get why we put that in our bulletin and why we're moving towards that sort of language. But sometimes, as in the psalm today, it backfires. General psychology is discovering what our psalms have known for thousands of years. To speak to ourselves out loud is not a sign of craziness, but actually, as one study has shown, I was just reading this article in the New York Times this last week, a sign of genius, a sign of focus. One thing thinking talks to the self. How much more powerful is it to remind ourselves, to speak to ourselves about God in the presence of God? Consider reading a psalm a day. And in those parts that are talking about God, think about them as talking to yourself in the shower. "I believe that I shall see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." I believe, I trust that I'm going to see it. The goodness, not just the terror or the judgment of God, but the goodness of God. And I'm going to see it in my lifetime. I'm going to see it today. You talk to yourself. You remind yourself of the character of God. Reminding ourselves of God's character emboldens us to then directly address God, as the psalm goes on to do. Not so much for things or for personal needs, though that's a part of prayer for sure, but more so for an openness to the implications of one thing living. And so our psalm says, "Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies." The future is open. though it is always going to be contested. And we make our future with God. It's not a destiny laid out in the stars. The Christian spirituality path is creative teamwork with the Spirit of God. After our service today, I'm going to share a brief PowerPoint presentation and give you guys an opportunity for your input as well, that will open us to a window on the future of our own parish. Nothing's written in the stars, but we will yet be led, I believe, to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of Abbotsford as a community. Talking to ourselves in God's presence, and of course addressing God directly, opens us then to the next powerful reality of prayer, which is listening to God, God speaking to us. And often this happens in surprising ways. Imagine you're out in your little dinghy and you're fishing, and you hear this voice, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." Wow. Erica Thiessen, who's a member, of course, of our congregation, has taught some of us about Lectio Divina, divine reading, in which Scripture becomes information, yes, but more than that, it can, if we listen, be the voice of Christ, guiding us onto the level path that is always present, that is there in the midst of darkness. The disciples had heard of Jesus, as our reading from John last week noted. They had encountered him already, but now they were being called to one thing living, one thing thinking. Now, today, we are being called at this table by the one who knows our core desire. Our desire for God's presence, our desire to live well, and who can lead us into practices that will create a lively and beautiful future for us and for many others. May it be so in our lives. Amen.